Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. Robert Moss has been a dream traveller since doctors pronounced him clinically dead when he was just 3 years old. From his experiences in many worlds, he created his school of active dreaming, his original synthesis of modern dream work and ancient shamanic and mystical practices for journey into realms beyond the physical. A former lecturer in ancient history at the Australian National University, he's a New York Times best-selling novelist, poet, journalist, and independent scholar. He leads popular workshops all over the world, including a three-year training for teachers of active dreaming and online courses for the Shift Network. Robert Moss joins me today to talk about his extraordinary life experiences, his work, his dream travels, and two of the many books on dreaming, shamanism, and imagination that he has dreamed into being. They are The Boy Who Died and Came Back and Dreaming the Soul Back Home. Robert Moss, welcome.
Very good to be dreaming with you, Sandy.
Likewise, so many fascinating books and so little time. So we've had to cut it down to two, but I could very easily create 10 shows out of all of them, I think, if not more. So let's start with your spiritual memoir, The Boy Who Died and Came Back, Adventures of a Dream Archaeologist in the Multiverse, which derives from what the doctor said when you first died in this lifetime. Tell us about that experience.
Yes, well, I'm going back to when I was 3 years old, Sandy, and my mother took me from Melbourne, we were on the East Coast, to Perth, where her family lived, to meet my great aunt, her aunt, who was a famous opera singer, Dame Nellie Melba's understudy and friend, and also a very influential medium, though she kept that quiet. Anyway, Auntie Dick, as we called her, I'm 3 years old, reads the tea leaves in the old-fashioned way, turns white, leaves the room and will not speak. Later on, we understood what she saw. She saw my death that winter in Tasmania. My father's an army officer. He'd been transferred down there. I was pronounced clinically dead after a bout of pneumonia in hospital. Then I revived, and the doctor said, I think with some embarrassment, oh, your boy died and he came back, didn't he, dear? So that was the start of it. And frankly, I don't remember anything at all of what happened when I was pronounced dead at three. I do know it's very hard to operate my body. I was born a big, sturdy, strong, sort of potentially sort of outdoors type of Aussie. Had a very hard time operating my body. And then when I was very sick and very alone and very much in sick rooms, which gave me a life of the imagination, a life of dreaming, rather similar to what many of us are reopening to in these shutdown times, these times of sequestration, where we're spending more time inside and going deeper within. Anyway, at nine, I said to my father, I feel a bit crook. That's where Australians say they're not feeling well. He rushes, he calls an ambulance, he knows I don't complain. My appendix is about to blow up, I'm under emergency surgery, and I'm out of my body. This starts to sound like one of those familiar ND experiences, but it goes a bit further. I'm 9 years old, I'm in a Melbourne hospital room. I am looking at my body from under the ceiling, and I don't like seeing the body being cut open. I don't like listening to the gossip and the talk, and I wander out into the corridor in my second body, in my dream body, and there's my mother sobbing, and I feel guilty. I'm an only child. I don't want to be around her pain. I'm sorry for causing it. And I look through the window in my second body, and now the sun is out there. There's the beach, and there's Luna Park along the beach, the famous Australian theme park. And I want to do what any kid of 9 years old would like to do. I want to get out along the beach. I want to go to the theme park. So I'm suddenly without recalling the fact that my body is actually on an operating table, a surgical table. I'm out of the hospital and I'm entering the moon gate of Luna Park. Luna Park has a famous huge moon face, and the open mouth is the door. So you're going through the face of the moon. It's actually a bit creepy. But I'm having fun. I'm going to look at the girls in their summer dresses. I'm going to ride the roller coaster. Oh, there's the ghost train. And I get on the ghost train and I'm going down, and suddenly, bang, I'm in another world. I don't understand this. I'm simply there, and I am received and loved by beautiful people who seem taller and paler than regular humans, but it never occurs to me that they're exactly different. They are different. I'm loved there. I'm received there. And Sandy, I seem to live a whole life with these people. I mean, they feed me, they raise me, they train me to be some kind of shaman of their culture, and I seem to live a full life, become a father, grandfather, elder, have children, grandchildren. Then that body is tired and used up, and I think I'm going to fly to another star, and suddenly, bang, I'm back in the body of a frightened 9-year-old boy in a Melbourne hospital operating room. And I remember. Now, this created a huge problem because I came from a supportive family. It's a military family in a very conservative era in Australia. And they want to support me, and they can't understand what I'm saying. The doctors say, oh, it's the medication, isn't it? He's hallucinating, poor kid. The first person I meet who can understand what I went through and what I'm now going through, because now the veils are open for me. I mean, I see across time, I talk to the dead. I'm doing all that stuff that ancient societies recognize happens in dreaming. But there's no one around me, even though my people are not bad, they'd like to understand. No one can understand what's happened to me or what I am becoming. It's an Aboriginal kid, and I'm not supposed to hang out with them. It's a racist era. But my Aboriginal friend, when he hears my story, says, oh, yeah, matter of fact, yeah, we do that. We get sick. Sometimes we go and live with the spirits, don't we? We come back, we're sometimes the same and we're sometimes different. And he says, my uncle, the artist, he does that to get the ideas for his good paintings, the stuff that's not for the tourists, the real stuff. So I'm learning from someone from the First Peoples of my native country that dreaming can take you into the dream time, can take you a deeper place, take you to another reality, and take you to the ancestors. There was something beyond the ancestors of your bloodlines, and that seems to be where I went. And Sandy, that is actually the root of my engagement with the dreaming all of my life. I've done different things in my life, but I've only really screwed up when I stopped listening to my dreams. I've done that occasionally, because modern society hasn't been very sympathetic. So I've carried from my childhood, and of course I've added to it the curiosity of an independent scholar, and the practice of a shamanic dreamer who does a lot of this stuff. I've learned many important things about dreaming, which I think right now are more essential in modern life than they've been for generations. I've learned that dreaming is about survival. I've learned that it shows us the roads in life that we are following and rehearses us for challenges and opportunities around us. I've learned that dreaming is about soul. It puts us in touch with our authentic spiritual teachers. It reminds us of our spiritual purpose. And frankly, in the times we're living in the pandemic times, dreaming is also about fun stuff like we can travel without leaving home. We can go to other places. We don't have to keep social distance. We can be as close to people we want to be with as we like in dreaming once we recognize that dreaming is not just about some sort of bubbles coming up from your personal subconscious. It's about traveling. It's about entering deeper realities. It's about remembering what the soul wants. This is basic knowledge I've carried from childhood, and I've returned to it now. I think a lot of people are hungry, actually, for this kind of access.
Well, I think they are, and I think, many, as you said, many people are now just discovering it. I mean, where is there to go at the moment except inside or out of the body? But I'm curious, you obviously had a really, really lonely childhood and plenty of opportunity to, you know, to travel inside and elsewhere. But later on in your life, the experiences that you had with dreaming turned into all kinds of things. I mean, they became the substance, some of those experiences became the substance of your best-selling novels, didn't they?
I use them in my novels. My characters have dreams, and the dreams are reported, and some of the dreams, my dreams, guided plot turns and narratives. And a bit like Graham Greene in that respect, my novels were basically thrillers and mysteries, as Greene's were. But like Greene, I found my novels gave me themes, they gave me characters, they gave me plot resolution. And then, of course, a moment came when I had to go beyond that phase of my life. I was now living on a farm in upstate New York. I'd been guided to it by an amazing series of synchronicities, actually. I bought the place because of a waking dream. I was thinking I'd like to get out in the country. I'd like to put down some roots in my adopted country. I'd set up with the fast track in New York that I'd been on. So I'm looking at a dilapidated farmhouse on some land in the upper Hudson Valley of New York, the edge of traditional Mohawk Indian country. And there's an old white oak tree behind the house, which my European ancestors would have known. It's been here for 400 years and it survived the lightning. I'm sitting under the oak tree. And suddenly I hear a squalling sound above me, kirr, kirr. And I look up and there's a red-tailed hawk circling above me, dropping lower and lower, squalling me in a language I feel I ought to be able to understand. And she, I learned later was a she, because of her size, drops a feather between my legs. So it's not the only reason why I moved to the farm, but it's one of the reasons. And very briefly, on that land called by the oak and the hawk, I was called from that liminal space between sleep and awake. I recommend spending more time there, particularly now that you don't have to go out to work so often or follow external schedules. Learn to spend a bit more time in that drifty space between sleep and awake. Most of us know it. I'm in that drifty space one night and something calls me. I mean, I'm just having an adventure. I'm traveling outside my body like a hawk. And then something calls me and I'm in a cabin in the woods somewhere near Montreal, but there's no modern development. I'm with a wise woman, an ancient woman. She's speaking to me in beautiful language, like lake water, a wave lapping upon a wave, and it's a language I don't understand. It was my first encounter with an ancient wise woman, mother of the wolf clan of the Mohawk people, the Kanyankahaka, the people of the flint, people of the stone. And this in midlife had the effect on me of something that changed my life. I mean, it was another kind of dream awakening. It took me years to get it together. But it was my encounter with her and being reminded by a wisdom carrier of an indigenous tradition what dreaming is really about. It took me from a very successful career that would look like other people's dream life. You're on the New York Times bestseller list, you know, Dom Perignon, stretch limos, whether you want them or not. It took me out of all that into a life which I found profoundly more rewarding, which is one of helping people to dream again and find in dreaming, this is why it's so relevant now, things that will get you through the tough times, things that will give you creative inspiration, things that will put you in touch with your soul family and help you to maintain a soul family across place and time, things that will remind you of the driving purpose of your life, things that will enable you to visit your counterparts in other places and times. And very quickly, since you mentioned the question that is germane to this, one of the things I learned to do is something I now teach other people to do. As a dreamer, you're a time traveler. And one of the things you can do is you can go back to your younger self in his or her own time and do some good. That lonely boy in the sickness, in the twilight of recovery rooms and bedrooms, half inside, sick half his year for 8 years, double pneumonia 12 times. How did he get through? One of the ways that he got through was that a large man with a pink face and lots of white hair would come into his room unseen by anyone else, sit down on his bed and say, "Hello, Robert. I know you're not feeling good, but you're going to make it through. You're going to survive. I know you're lonely, but one day you'll know the love of women and they'll love you. I know it's hard to talk about your dreams and visions, but one day all over the world people will want to hear them." Those are visitations by my older self, younger than I am now, 20 years younger than I am now, going back to that boy's self to help him through. Might sound crazy, but what's wrong with experimenting with this kind of thing? What's wrong with giving it a go? Suppose you could go back mind to mind to a younger self when she is vulnerable or violated or lost or cold or confused and be the cheerleader and mentor in her mind that she needed in that time. What harm could come from that? Suppose that in that effort to travel across time to that younger self, you could connect with and embrace an aspect of your own vital energy and imagination and even joy and playfulness that might have been missing from you as an adult. That's one of the things that I learned from my own experience that I could help others to do. And I must say, the great pleasure in my life, Sandy, although I might have to see it on screen these days more than face to face, is to see the light of spirit coming back into the eyes of someone who's made that kind of connection with a younger self that might have been absent for a long time.
Well, it's interesting how much interest there is these days in, I mean, you look at the success of the books and the TV series Outlander, which is just one of many, many books, and people are just riveted by it. The First Nations that you mentioned of Australia, I mean, they believe that this is a dream. And what we call dream time is the awake part. So it's not surprising, if that is true, that we can go to that awake part to find what we need in order to support us through this everyday dream life, which isn't quite as easy to navigate as the dream life seems to be.
Well, one of the fundamental things to know about dreaming, I learned this a long time ago, is dreaming is not fundamentally about what happens during sleep. You open much of the literature on sleep and dreams, and a dream is something that happens in your sleep, right? Well, yes, indeed. We have very important sleep dreams. We may not have asked them, we may not want them, but they can be arousing, awakening. They can hold up a magic mirror to our waking actions and attitudes. And that can be very important. That could be a revelation. But dreaming is not fundamentally about what happens during sleep. It's about waking up. Because in ordinary life, we're often in the condition of sleepwalkers who've forgotten what it's all about. We're trying to get by, trying to fit in with other people's expectations. We're trying to fill in the blanks on the calendar or meet those appointments. We've forgotten the larger picture. So dreaming might happen with your eyes wide open. To go back to what you're saying about the Aboriginal peoples of Australia, they say we live in the speaking land. By that, they mean everything is speaking. The tree is speaking. The goanna is speaking. The mountain is speaking. The rock is speaking. Everything is speaking in many voices if we will just listen. So dreaming as a practice is not just about what you do with your eyes closed. It's about what you do with your eyes open. And part of my practice all of my life has been to walk around this world looking for the dreamlike symbols that arise around me in the street, in the park, by the beach. It's a bit more confined in terms of the landscapes I can visit right now, but even walking my little dog in a somewhat gritty urban neighborhood, I will notice something very interesting, you know, in the course of the walk, and that will be a dreamlike message from the world. And if I've got a theme on my mind, I will receive the coincidence, the symbolic pop-up, as a message. And dreaming again might be what the shaman does. When the shaman using drumming, we don't use hallucinogens, but using drumming to shift consciousness maybe, or focused intent, goes on a journey to a place of encounter with spiritual allies, to a place of healing, place of adventure, non-ordinary reality, travels across time and space as a focused, conscious, wide awake journey. I like to dream a lot in the space that Tinkerbell recommended. Back in the Hollywood movie of Peter Pan, it's not in the original novel, but back in the Hollywood movie, Peter Pan is sad because his fairy friend is going away. And Tinkerbell gives some of the best advice on dreaming I've ever heard. Tinkerbell says to Peter, "Look for me in the place between sleep and awake. There I will love you. There you will find me." The place between sleep and awake. You know, people are off their previous schedules, and it's a good time to learn to do something in that space. Not kick yourself because you're awake at some funny hour and curse yourself for having insomnia, but see what images will rise and fall behind closed eyelids if you simply adopt a sort of state of horizontal meditation. This is a kind of everyday dream yoga. So this is one of the ways of opening to what the deeper life has to offer. It's also one of the ways of screening your own nighttime cinema, where you can see movies that are made just for you. You can step through the screen and become director, scriptwriter, and star of your own productions. So as I say, I think all of this dream stuff is not just some sort of recreational sideline. I think it is, as our ancestors understood, absolutely central to our ability to thrive and survive and get in touch with the meaning of everything in our lives.
It is. I'm going to hold you there, Robert, as we go to break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is dream traveler and teacher, author and founder of the School of Active Dreaming, Robert Moss. We're talking about what his extraordinary life and travels, both awake and in dream time, have taught him and can teach us about dreaming our souls back home. We'll be back with more from Robert Moss after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Time's flagship radio show, What Is Going On. As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who have walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, S-E-D-G-B-E-E-R.com. I'll see you there.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert Moss, I want to squeeze both books, Dreaming the Soul Back Home and The Boy Who Died and Came Back, into this next segment, because in the third segment, I would like to go back to what you said in the beginning, which is how we can use dreaming to change the present, which is something that we badly need to do. So just I want you to encapsulate for us the 9 keys to living consciously in the multi-dimensional universe that you offer in The Boy Who Died and Came Back. If you could just quickly go over those. I'm sorry to truncate it, but we have to be fairly concise, I'm afraid.
You're testing my memory here, Sandy, unless you want to prompt me.
I can prompt you.
You want to prompt me? Why don't you prompt me rather than having me prompt myself?
Okay. Oh, you said to live well, we must practice death. What does that mean?
Yes, well, this is essential. So many of us, and it's very important right now, death all around us and people being pushed off into death without preparation, rituals of farewell. Very important to make death an ally rather than a dread. And you know what? Dreaming is the best preparation for dying. This is something of fundamental importance we need to hear and understand right now. The Lakota have many ways of approaching the sacred. They say the path of the soul in dreams is the path of the soul after death. In other words, we go traveling. We travel to realms beyond the physical. This is excellent preparation for what lies ahead. And as a practice, a meditation practice, which might be reinforced by a dream practice, the idea that your death is with you right now and that you should be prepared to answer some basic questions in the presence of death so that you can move on with minimal regrets, that is an excellent practice. So my practice from time to time is to say to myself, what do I most regret having not done in this life, and what can I do to make up for that? What do I most regret having done? What was the mistake I most regret? What can I do about that? Where have I hurt other people? How can I make up for that? So being prepared for death in order to live well is also about adopting the practice of living and dying with minimal regrets, identifying the regrets that you have and doing something about them, moving beyond them.
Okay, the next one is, we have a guide for our lives who is no stranger.
Yes, I'm convinced, and this is, you know, you find this in mystical traditions, philosophical traditions, find them Plotinus and other philosophers. I'm convinced that the most important life teacher, the most important spiritual guide we have is no stranger. It is the self, the higher self on the level accessible to us right now. I think of it sometimes as the double on the balcony, a self who is living on a high terrace, high above the world, can see me, can watch me without judgment, with some sense of comedy perhaps, and if I can rise to his or her level of understanding and perception, this would be a wonderful thing. I mean, the guide is that close, both close as your jugular, to quote Rumi. But I'm not talking about the great god or the great goddess. I'm talking about the guide of your life, who is your spiritual self, on the level above the one you are operating on currently. To get to know that self more closely, to commune with them, even to fuse with them, is the heart of real spiritual evolution.
And you say that when we rise to the perspective of the greater self, we're able to make peace between different personality aspects, including our counterparts in other times and parallel realities.
I've become convinced, not as a belief, but as a result of experience and observation, that my life and your life are connected to dramas and relationships that are operating in other lifetimes, as well as to aspects of ourselves that might go unacknowledged in our present life. We're related to parallel selves who made different choices in this world. We're related to people in the past and the future and in parallel times who are not actually our present selves, but members of a multidimensional family. So there's an element of truth in reincarnation, but the bigger truth is it's all going on right now. So if you are connected to somebody who lived in Orkney in, you know, 300 years after Christ, maybe her story right now, her connection with the sea eagles, is relevant to you right now. Maybe you can even connect with her right now. But the way to make some sense out of all this, which could be sort of headache producing and dizzying, having to do all these aspects and counterparts, is to somehow manage to rise to the oversoul or the self on a higher level, which is like the connector between all these different experiences. And this is a practice that can be learned. It's a practice of meditation. It's a practice of conscious dreaming. It is fundamental, I think, to being able to get a grip on and a perspective on the things that life is throwing at you and the way that they relate to the challenges of other life experiences, including, I want to say this again emphatically, including the experiences you are having in parallel lives, in your parallel selves, that might be more relevant to you right now than you understand.
Yes, and many people say that if we can do that, we can bring back gifts and traits and talents that our parallel selves actually have and use them in this reality.
Absolutely. I'm convinced that this is so. So while I'm shut up, you know, in a house in the urban northeast of North America, there's a parallel Robert who's been swimming in the South Pacific for the last 50 years. He's in such great physical condition. I think he's probably in the water right now. So maybe if I can reach to him, I can bring some of his physical glory and connection with the ocean, which I would like to be more in myself.
Certainly. I mean, we all know, because we do it, we daydream and we might think about a particular holiday we were on, a place we went. You know, if it's freezing cold winter, we can dream that we're actually in the sunshine and we can feel that. We bring it into the present. So in a way, we are time traveling.
Yeah, yes. I mean, Sandy, that's so wise. It's much wiser than most of us think. We think, oh, it's just daydream, just idle fancy. You know what? It's an aspect of dreaming. It's an aspect of using your imagination. And here's what medical science is telling us. I'm getting shivers as I speak, so we know we're getting good. You know, the body believes in images. The body believes in images. It will adjust the pharmaceuticals it's pumping out of its own inner chemicals factory according to the images we're entertaining. So if you can put yourself, you know, on that beach in Aruba or where, which is the last holiday I had, or wherever it is, and dwell there for a while, your body's going to respond to some extent as if you're actually doing it. So there is a key to getting well and staying well and boosting your immune system in using your imagination to put yourself into desirable environments right now. So this is the kind of daydreaming that can become actually a mode of self-healing and self-protection as well as just pure enjoyment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, they're proving this with, you know, visualization and cancer patients, etc. You know, and also, you know, the wonderful placebo effect, which is now being studied and really should
Absolutely.
Have been studied
a long time ago. It's widely said, whether it's widely true, I don't know. It's widely said that the placebo effect accounts for about 80% of cures. I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but I've seen that quoted by doctors. We do know that the belief system has a great deal to do with what goes on in the body as well as the mind and the emotions. So anything we can do that can boost our imaginal defenses, that's a good adjective, imaginal, that means product of the true imagination. And anything we can do that boosts our imaginal defenses is worth entertaining.
I'm going to touch on one more of the nine keys that you mentioned. We can't cover them all. That is, we must entertain the spirits, starting with our very own.
Yes, well, actually, I remember reading of an Inuit shaman some time ago who said, one of the most important things to know about life is we must entertain the spirits. And he said, well, you do that by coming up with fresh words. In other words, if you want to pray or invoke help, greater powers, don't just go and saying the same old mumbo jumbo or hand me down catechism or something or other. Come up with fresh words. So I notice, and maybe other people do too, that when we do something new, that there's something creative, something that maybe has an element of risk in it, we attract the support of greater powers, including our own creative spirit. We literally become different, because if we are moving about beyond our comfort zone into something that requires a creative leap, an element of risk, then greater powers come in. But the creative spirits we want to entertain include our own child self, the magical child. I say to people who are skeptical or just feel blocked in relation to any of this, I say, don't worry. The master of dreaming, your great imagineer, is your inner child, your magical child. I mean, she knows, he knows the power of making things up. If you can just form more of an arrangement by which you bring more of your joyful, playful, imaginative child self into your life, and that will involve doing things that entertain her and making her feel that she is safe, then you have all the imagination and all the creative passion that you need. So this is part of the art of living for me, making room for the younger self. So as I talk to you, Sandy, I'm surrounded on my overcrowded desk, not just by books and papers, but by stuffed animals, tiger pencil sharpener, marbles, toy soldiers, I'm a boy, a magical school bus, a 1950s miniature Rolls Royce, and other things that reassure my boy self that I might be of some interest.
And I have a grubby green hippo sitting on my bed.
Well, that's perfect.
It goes
that's
everywhere.
Perfect. That's great. I think a grubby green hippo is absolutely perfect.
Yes, necessary. Let's move on to Dreaming the Soul Back Home. I mean, the book that Stanley Krippner said, if we would like to work with our dreams and can read only one book this year, we can do no better than read this one. And this, there's a lot about soul loss and shamanic journey, and you know, the shamanic tradition does believe in the fact that whenever we have a physical or emotional trauma, we lose part of our energy, we lose part of our soul. The thing is, how do we, you know, the challenge has to be, first we have to recognize that, and then we have to work at getting it back. So how do we do that?
Well, let me make a general observation. Let me tell you a story, if I may, a story about actually helping someone to do this, someone who'd actually lost her dreams as well as her soul. But the general concept, very briefly, is that soul loss is the shaman's main explanation of our existential complaints, why our immune systems don't work, why we get depressed, why we have chronic fatigue, why we're prone to addiction, etc. The simple explanation is that the world gets cold and cruel, we suffer violation, we suffer cruelty, we're ashamed or embarrassed. Part of us goes away, it doesn't want to be around. And, you know, good therapy can try to get it back, but maybe it's gone so far away that something beyond conventional therapy is required. And that would be soul retrieval if the shamanic practitioner is going to make the journey and try and put it back in your body. This involves a physical ritual. But it might be called soul recovery, the phrase I like to use, when it's something that essentially, if you're in a sufficiently safe and protected environment, you might be able to help bring about by doing some work with your own dreams, including the absence of dreams. This might sound crazy for a moment, because let me just explain and then tell you the story. One of the principal symptoms of soul loss, that you've lost a vital part of yourself, is the absence of dream, absence of dream recall, divorce from the dream state. The Iroquois, or Iroquois, whose languages I had to study, they say that if you've lost your dreams, it's because you've lost the part of your soul that is the dreamer. I believe this to be literally true. So what use is dream work if you don't have any dreams? I'm going to tell you a story about that. I was leading a workshop in southern France. I mean, I used to travel every week. I'm not doing that right now. And there was a French woman there who was profoundly adept in many disciplines, in ranging from kung fu to yoga to meditation to shamanic journey, etc. But she is really pissed, forgive my French, the second morning of the residential retreat, and she was angry at the breakfast table. I said, what is the matter? She says, you people sit down here and have breakfast. You have your coffee, you have your baguette, and you talk about dreams. I don't have any dreams. And I looked at them. And I said, really? She said, no, I don't have any dreams. I said, well, could you perhaps go back in your memory and tell me the last dream you remember in your life? And she stares at me. And then she says, 30 years ago. Okay, I was 9 years old, she says. I was 9 years old, so she's 39, 9 years old, and I dream that there's a hand coming from behind a curtain, and in the hand is chocolate, and I love chocolate, I love candy, but I remember I've been told, do not take candy from strangers, and I call for maman and papa, and I wake myself up. And I'm still screaming for maman and papa, come. They say, it's a dream, it's just a dream, it's not real, go back to sleep. She says, well, I'm a good Catholic girl. I pray to Jesus and Mary and all the saints. No more dreams. And I guess her prayer was answered. So here we are. Here's someone who has no dreams. She's got all these techniques, including shamanic journeying, but no dreams. I say, look, if this is my dream and I'm interested in bringing my dreams back and maybe something more will come with them, then I'm going to go back to the dream I remember. It might turn out to be a time tunnel, a bridge to my younger self. She's looking at me intently. I said, you know how to journey with the drum. You know how to project consciousness the way shamans do with the drum. I'm suggesting that you might want to go back inside that dream across those 30 years, open the curtain and see what's behind the curtain. And she starts to tremble. It has that force. So the energy of her fear has been aroused. And any kind of energy is something we can harness and work with. So I don't want to miss the opportunity. I say, are you willing to do this? She is shaking and she's crying. She says, will you come with me? I said, we can form a small group. We can journey with you. We'll form small groups of four within the workshop. So now we're doing the journey where she's going to go back into her dream. This is called dream reentry. It's a very powerful technique. It will help release you from nightmares. It will help you discover power of waiting for you. It's a very important technique of what I call active dreaming. So I'm drumming for the group, and she is journeying. She's going back into the dream from 30 years ago, and several of us are going with her as friends, bodyguards, companions, observers. She goes back into the dream. She opens the curtain. Behind the curtain is a being of angelic radiance. And she's awed by it. And then the features resolve. And it's suddenly the face of a man she loved. He was her father's best friend. He owned a toy shop in Paris. He'd let her play there after hours. Nothing bad. Completely lovely second father relationship. She said, it was you. It was you. Why didn't you show yourself? She's wide awake and conscious. She's inside the shamanic journey. And he says, oh, Cherie, I wanted to show myself, but are you forgotten? My face was mutilated in that car accident that killed me. I could not show myself. I thought I'd scare you, but I wanted to give you something sweet. So that's the best I could do. And she comes back crying. And what's the good of this, you might say? Well, it's resolved a mystery about a terrifying dream, but it's the result. It's the soul recovery result. It's a soul healing result that matters. The next morning at the breakfast table, she's there ahead of everyone else with a bowl of French coffee. And she's pissed again because we have not come down when she did. I've been waiting. I need to tell you my dreams. She tells us rapid as a high velocity train, train à grande vitesse. Rabbit is a high-speed train, she tells us, 8 dreams from the night following her journey. 8 dreams from the life of a woman who remembered no dreams for 30 years. And she tells the dreams, they're like fireflies. They're like butterflies in the air, parts of soul fluttering around her. We realize she's brought back the part of her soul that is the bright dreamer. So she did that through a combination of dream work and shamanism. She had a dream. She accepted she had a dream from long, long ago. And she was able, with guidance, with help, to go back into that dream in a shamanic journey with the drum, a wide awake shamanic journey. In the process, she performed profound soul healing, soul recovery for herself. So it's a teaching story. It's an example of what becomes possible. When we learn some techniques, which are basically simple, I will say that for the techniques to prosper, you need to have established a safe space in your life and around you. You need to be able, if you're going to go back to that younger, traumatized self, you need to be able to go back as the adult survivor who made it through. And it's good for you to have a family of supporters, maybe a family you recruit. In these times, I know, leading my own dream schools online and so on, I notice we are forming some incredible intentional communities. They're meeting themselves online and, of course, in the dream time. So it's good to find that you have a family of spiritual allies in this world who will support your soul odyssey.
Your books are full of incredible stories like that, people who have had ongoing nightmares, and eventually they actually go into rather than run away from what is scaring them and have these amazing breakthroughs. You share stories of people that are close to you that you are able to journey together with and dream, and you can both come up with exactly the same kind of information. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go to break there. It came a little bit earlier than I was ready for it. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with dream archaeologist and teacher, author, and founder of the School of Active Dreaming, Robert Moss, about his life and his books. Still to come, how we can dream ourselves and our world into a better place, right now and into the future. Join us after this short break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Robert Moss, earlier today I was watching a video on your website that you did for the Shift Network, and you were talking about, you know, what is happening in the world today, as we discussed in the opening of the show. And, you know, as individuals, we do dream. We dream what is happening, and therefore what we've been dreaming is not that pleasant. So now we need to change the dream. And you say that we can do that. We can have a great effect on what the future holds. So how do we do that?
Well, I wish we could dream our way, all of us, into a parallel universe.
Until it's over.
Where the virus never happened, and where the things that happened in Washington never happened. I wish we could do that. We can certainly, in dreams, take flight to alternate realities and other places in this world and beyond this world for rest and recreation and regeneration. When our dreams are scary these days relating to the literal world around us, it's worth paying attention and not just saying, oh yeah, more of that, more than what I see on the news. It's worth asking yourself, is the dream reinforcing something you need to think about? Is it, for example, reinforcing the need to go on wearing the face mask or sheltering at home, even if other people aren't doing it? I think some of those dreams that we don't like are cautionary dreams, telling us, hey, pay attention. Don't just listen to the warning on the TV. Your dreams are saying the same thing and maybe a little bit more. So there's a level of looking at dreams which involves inquiring whether this is literally or physically, in other words, a preview or a current scan of what's going on in the external world. Because our dreams do that. They're a kind of intuitive radar. They're a guidance system. They're a survival system. So don't throw away any dream. I want to throw this out. Any dream is telling you more than you already know, even if it's a dream that you don't like. The so-called scary dreams and nightmares might be glimpses of our mass condition and of bad things that are happening and going to happen to people around us. They could involve our personal situation. They could also, in the case of the scary dream that makes you run away because you can't take it anymore, the nightmare is a broken dream, not just the scary dream. They could also be something much more than all of that. It could be that a greater power is seeking your attention. It could be that your dream producers are producing special effects because there's something you need to look at. It could be because you're being invited to step into a place of new power which will require you to brave up. When I first started living in North America, I started dreaming of a giant bear. Now, I grew up in Australia. We've got koalas. They're very cute. They're not bears. Of course, my European ancestors and yours know the bear in many guises. But this was different. There's a huge bear. It wasn't attacking me, but I was terrified in the dream because it's so much bigger than me. I wasn't trying to attack it or call the cops or something, but I was sort of frozen in fear. And finally, I decided what I would now say to anybody else. And my dreams of the bear are more than 30 years ago. I'd now say this to anyone. Don't leave it unresolved. See if you can find a way to step back into that space, confront what is challenging you, and see what needs to be done. So I just put myself in an easy chair, no drumming, no special effects. I made it my intention to use my fear to put myself back in front of the giant bear. And there I was, immediately. My fear helped me. The bear was rank and feral and enormous, and I wasn't enthusiastic, but I pushed myself to go up to the bear to try to understand what's going on. The bear wraps its great arms around me. I think I'm gone, and it's going to crush my rib cage. Yes, I know it's a vision, but it's absolutely real. But the hug is gentle, and the bear at some point wants me to look at the heart, and I look at the heart center, and I notice it's implausible, but it's how it is. My heart and the heart of the bear are joined by something like a thick umbilical, pumping energy back and forth. The bear says to me, mind to mind, call on me. I'll show you what you need for healing and what other people need in order to be healed. And Sandy, the promise has been kept ever since then. I've called on the bear for my personal healing and protection, and I've called on the bear in my circles to heal and protect people as they embark on their own healing journeys, including trying to bring parts of their soul that were lost through soul loss, bring back that beautiful child. So this is one of the ways that dreaming can support our life today. Can we change the world overnight? Well, we can change our own experience of the world, and that can happen with a moment of revelation. My awakening and his entering were the same, the mystics say, about the encounter with the true spiritual teacher. We have the ability at any moment in life to change our attitude, and that can change everything, and dreaming can be part of doing that. Before the COVID pandemic came upon us, I was thinking again about the enduring lesson of Viktor Frankl, the Viennese psychiatrist who was sent to Auschwitz in World War II and reduced to a skeleton with a tattoo on his arm. And he got himself through famously. He wrote a book about it called Man's Search for Meaning by putting his imagination into a scenario which seemed impossible. A scenario in which a year after the war has ended, Hitler's a memory, and he's giving a lecture on the psychology of the concentration camps. Can you imagine? He's in one. He's imagining himself well-fed in a nice suit in an auditorium in New York City, talking about the psychology of the concentration camps. 1 year after the war, he was in that auditorium giving that lecture. I was thinking about that before COVID. I actually did a new version of that story as introduction to my book, Growing Big Dreams, that's coming out in October. His example, I'm getting shivers again, reminds us we can grow a vision of possibility that can take us beyond present circumstances. This is dreaming big in the sense of using our imagination to imagine a world like what? A world where we've dealt with the climate situation, a world where we put decency and civility and honor back in government, a world where we've restored our balance with nature, a world in which humans are thinking about soul, thinking about spirit, sharing their dreams of life and their dreams of the night and using them as sources of healing and guidance and helping each other to manifest what needs to be done. I have that vision in my heart and my mind. From my point of view, it's going to involve us doing nothing less than attending to the rebirth of a dreaming culture where we support each other in all those ways. We can put our minds and imagination there. We can take other actions in the ordinary world, and none of that will be lost. Eventually, out of us shifting our attitude and using our imagination to dream our way forward in our own lives and for our kind, the change will come. The change will come. And hopefully, with hindsight, we'll look back on all of this and say it was a ghastly, awful, crazy, but ultimately cleansing experience from which a new world will emerge. That's my hope.
Well, yes, I'm sure that's the hope of many, many people. We've been talking about dreams, opening yourself up to dreams, you know, going where the dream takes you, allowing, you know, the symbology to come to you. But also, you've talked about being able to ask for a dream. To ask to have a particular dream to give you an answer to something. You once asked a dream to help you be a good teacher when you started teaching. Yeah. Yeah. I asked a few weeks ago for a dream, that would give me clarity on a particular situation. And I got the most incredibly, you know, obvious metaphor in that dream. But I can't do that at will.
Well, it's probably desirable not to do it all the time. And it's possibly also desirable if you do it once and you don't get anything much, not to throw away what you've got. I mean, sometimes we set an intention, we remember something from a dream, we don't see the connection, we throw the dream away. It's always worth playing the detective game of trying to link an apparently unconnected dream to the intention beforehand. We also need to be willing to be shocked. Now, people can approach dream incubation, which is the old word for this kind of thing, setting an intention for guidance or for healing during the night. They can do with some ritual. I mean, they put it ranging from putting a mugwort sachet under your pillow to certainly writing down your intention. You want to do that, to other things you might do in your environment, maybe including how you prepare yourself for bed, whether you take a bath, whether you light a candle, whether you do watch what you eat and drink for a while. I mean, you can surround the setting of the intention with as much or as little ritual as you're game for. I mean, I'm pretty sort of low maintenance about these things. If I want to set an intention for dreaming, I'll just set it in a fairly straightforward way. I used to say, show me what I need to see. I don't always say that these days because I don't necessarily want to see everything that's going on in our world right now. But so I might adjust and say, show me what I can use to do some good. You know, in other words, not just what I can see, but what can I do to use to do some good. I will ask for guidance for a particular project or a particular issue or to help a certain person. And as a nightly practice, as I say, I don't recommend this doing this all the time. But if you have a particular theme or question on your mind, you might just state it as clearly as possible, like I would like guidance on such and such. Or you could say, in the extremity we are in, are looking for inner and other resources than the obvious one. It's a time to look for resources beyond the obvious ones when the obvious, you know, solutions are not working. So that's part of it. I think if you do remember something after setting an intention, the game, as I say, is to make a link between your intention and the dream content, even if initially it seems to be a big gulf. And let's remember that our dream producers, whoever they might be, might think that there's something more important for us to think about than the intention that we set. So sometimes they'll give us something that trumps, excuse that term, that word, that trumps our initial intention because they want to take us to a deeper place.
Mm. Robert, we only have a couple of minutes. I just want to let our listeners know that your Dream in the Soul Back Home is now available as an audiobook narrated by you, that you do have a new book coming out, as you said, Growing Big Dreams. Would you like to quickly just give us a, you know, 30-second précis of that?
Oh, I'm very excited about this book. The subtitle is Manifesting Your Heart's Desires Through the 12 Secrets of Imagination, and it opens with a foreword, which I thought might be a bit dark and because I wrote it pre-pandemic, about learning from Viktor Frankl and how you get through Auschwitz with the help of your imagination, how you get through one of the world's greatest nightmares. So it's all about how to learn to apply our imagination to get ourselves through. It's about the idea that dreaming will help us get through and show us what the soul wants. It's about the idea, as we mentioned, that our magical child is the great imagineer in our lives. If we come closer to the magical child, we will do better. It's about learning to spend more time in that liminal twilight state between sleep and awake. It's about learning to make our own night movies with the help of our imagination, which might be scenarios for what we can manifest in our world. It's about learning to align with a bigger story, a myth, a story of mythic power, and step out of the small self-limiting stories, dropping them like old snakeskins. It's about all this and more, and I think it's a book for our times.
I should look forward to that. I really have been enjoying your dreams, and I'm searching everywhere for a copy of The Firekeeper, which intrigues me because I know you've had many dreams about that as well. Robert Moss, it's been a delight to talk with you. Thank you so much. I don't think there's anything else to tell people. Other than you have a radio show on healthylife.net, The Way of the Dream.
I do, and I have a website, mossdreams.com, and I have a blog. And, of course, I have lots of books and other products and the Shift Network.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Okay, so Way of the Dream, a radio show that would be worth listening to. I think it's every 2 weeks, isn't it?
It's every month.
Every month.
But what's going on all the time are my online courses of the Shift Network, which have become very deep and very adventurous, and we've built this wonderful international community, and that is very, very exciting.
Good. Robert Moss, thank you for joining us today.
May your best dreams come true, Sandy.
Thank you. You too. So to experience more of Robert Moss, check out his website at mossdreams.com, his blog at mossdreams.blogspot.com. You can connect with him via his Facebook author page, Robert Moss Books, and his Facebook community page, Active Dreaming. And don't forget the Way of the Dreamer radio show at healthylife.net. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about me and the No BS Spiritual Book Club and what I offer outside of this show at sedgbeer.com. In the meantime, I'll be back with another edition of What is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.